Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Hello, hockey fans, and welcome once again to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. I'm Mark Warner along with Chris Lisa.
We are now going to be affiliated with the inaugural launch of the Hockey Writers podcast page over at thehockeywriters.com.
We're talking with J.D. Stiles from Cali Sports News, reporting live from the Stanley Cup Finals. And today we're being joined by the first general manager in Las Vegas franchise history, George McPhee.
With Pat Quinn, you know,
might be
the finest man I've ever met in my life.
This is the Vegas Hockey Podcast. We're talking with Quinn Malarchuk.
There's something about George McPhee that everybody says is a good pick.
This is the Vegas Hockey Podcast. We're talking with Dana Lane, play-by-play voice of the MLB Rebel Hockey Team and owner of Dana Lane Sports. Joining us now is Matt Pryor of thehockeywriters.com. He's coming to us from the Dallas Stars training camp. Hello, hockey fans, and welcome once again to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. I'm Mark Warner, along with Chris Lisa, Islanders contributor for the fan-sided Ion Isles website. Chris, are you there, sir? We're getting a little technical difficulties again. Let me try and bring Chris in here. Chris, are you with me this morning, sir?
I am. How you doing there, buddy?
I'm good. We got a lot to get to today. Got a really good show lined up. Alan Zlotarczynski is joining us. Dana Lane, as always, we're going to go down the Vegas lane. There's a bunch of stuff to talk about in the Knights camp and the UNLV camp from this week. But let's break the ice right away. The first coaching domino falls in the National Hockey League, and it just so happened to be Chris's beloved Islanders. So Jack Capuano, relieved of duties as head coach. Dougie Waite comes in on with the interim coach label. First of all, Chris, just as a fan, what do you think of that? Was it time for a new face and a new voice in the dressing room there in New York?
Actually, it's the second domino, because remember, Gerard Gallant got let go by the Panthers.
My mistake.
No worries. I guess, you know, I was a little surprised simply because there had been a few times this year where I felt there were kind of breaking point moments. So they had started to play better, but still their biggest bugaboo has just been so many games, losing them in the third period. When just a key play could have turned losses into wins, that's kind of been the theme this year. The camel that broke the straw's back, if you will, or vice versa, whatever, is they lost a couple last week to the Carolina Hurricanes. They had a 3-1 lead, caught that up, down 4-3, came out in the third period, got the lead back, played a real strong 5 minutes, and then just totally fell apart and lost 7-4. I think Carolina had 45 shots in the game. Thomas Greiss played well, even though he gave up 7 goals. That shows you how much they left him hung out to dry. And one of the owners, Jonathan Ledecky, was on the road with the team for that game, and I guess that was it. And they didn't make the move until after the Boston game in Boston on Martin Luther King Day, when the Islanders ironically won 4-0 in Jack Campiano's final game. They felt it was time to make a change, and with Doug Waite being there, being part of the franchise for a while now and knowing all the players, he finished his career with the Islanders. He then was part of the front office, then he moved as an assistant coach, plus still being assistant general manager, and he is very close with many of the players. So, yeah, I think it's a new voice, and he's the interim. So I believe, don't quote me on this, but I believe he will get the rest of the season, and I think many things will be up for review at that point. So, they believe it or not, they have a chance these next couple weeks. They're not that many points behind that second wild card. Unfortunately for them, they're in the Metro and not the Atlantic. Had they be in the Atlantic, the Islanders would not only have a chance for that second wild card, but to finish in the top three of the officially in the second or third slot of that division. But since they're in the Metro, that's basically the fighting for one spot. So, but they have a number of games in hand on just about everybody other than, I think, Toronto. So, you know, we'll see. Like I said, they're at the high watermark of the year of one game over 500. They have two big games tonight, against one again at home against your LA Kings, and then tomorrow against the Philadelphia Flyers, which is also one of the teams they're chasing. So the next couple weeks are big for them.
Speaking of that game tonight, Chris and I are going to be guests on the Kings Road Rules podcast after the game at 7 o'clock. So follow at JD_Styles, STYLZ, and he'll link out links to that show if you guys want to listen in to me and Chris go Kings Isles head to head there. But I wanted to ask you, and it always bothers me when it seems like a young team is taking that step, taking that next step. And last year we know that the Islanders won their first playoff series in quite some time. And then they go through not just a minor roster shakeup, but it seemed like some of the kids were not retained or you know, moved and brought in. It always worries me that the chemistry is going to kind of be upset from that process you go through as a young team to learning how to play with each other, then learning how to play against other teams and imposing your will on any team that you play against. And that's a fragile balance. How much of Coach Capuano's dismissal is actually a result of the offseason moves and the roster change that they went through over the offseason?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they obviously, you know, the play of last year from Franz Nielsen, Kyle Okposo, to this year with Andrew Ladd and Jason Chimera has been a drop off, to say the least. But I think the guy that they really miss is Franz Nielsen. In that case, they did do everything they possibly could. In fact, they offered the same deal, and he decided to go to Detroit. So from that standpoint, but you know, this is a team that, even though they lost, and also lost Matt Martin, this is a team that's been together for a while. I mean, you look at these players, they've played together, for a while, both on, you know, you look at the defense and offense alike. So, you know, changes will happen from year to year. You'll lose a couple of players, have a couple of new players come in. So I really don't think, I think at the end of the day, what was the final straw for Capuano was these, you know, the Islanders kept making similar mistakes, be it if they came out of the game slow or third period woes or what have you. And the other part is some of the youngsters have not developed as well as they should. So I think when you put all that together, and keep in mind, he was the fourth longest tenured coach in the league. So he got hired, I believe, in 2010. So he had been here a while. So this is, you know, and I'm sure he'll get, you know, another chance down the line. Might have to take an assistant role first, but and who knows? Maybe, I don't know what his relationship was like with George McPhee. Maybe George McPhee is very high on him. I have no idea. I don't know if he'll, you know, get consideration for that job, but yeah, so he did some good things with the Islanders, but in terms of taking that next step, and again, I'm not putting it all on Jack Capuano. You know the old expression, you can't fire the players, you can only fire the coach.
For sure, and I can on a little tangent here, I can understand watching a team just repeatedly making the same mistakes over and over again, and that cost Coach Fisher his job with the Los Angeles Rams. So just watching that same mistake being repeated over and over again is for you as a fan of the Islanders has to be very, very tiring. So maybe a new voice, maybe some fresh air there in the locker room, and they can be able to turn it down. There are a lot of teams for him to pass to get to that second wild card spot that you're hoping for. But on the bright side, the Islanders have some of the most skilled and highly touted prospects coming up through their pipeline. So maybe some of that youthful experience will be on board next year. And if Dougie Wade is retained or a new coach comes in, they'll be able to change that fortune back to where they look like they were really a team on the rise. Speaking of teams on the rise, we did our little playoff spot and divisional position segment in last week's Break in the Ice. And I wanted to kind of introduce a new segment this week, Rising and Falling, and follow up on some of what we talked about last week here before Dana Lang joins us. So I put together just a little small list of teams that I think are on the rise. And it's coincidental that the Caps are heading my team on the rise list this week, because Alan C covers the Caps and he'll be in our third segment of the afternoon to cover that. They've stormed up to the top of their division. Minnesota Wild, also a team on the rise, behind the continued good play of Dubnyk and the maybe the new voice in the locker room there with Coach Boudreau. Coach Boudreau making a big difference there. And the Oilers, we talked about a couple weeks ago and whether sustainability was going to be an issue for that. And watching last night, I saw Milan Lucic throwing his weight around, scoring a goal. That's got to be good news, Oilers fans. And they've opened up a six-point lead for that cherished third spot in the Pacific Division. Take your shots on any or all of those three and where you see them headed.
Yeah, no, I would say, you know, Minnesota's in a battle with Chicago for the division, but they're very secure, to say the least. To get one of those automatic spots. They both have 63 points. Minnesota does have four games in hand on Chicago. I mean, the Caps, you know, it is a dogfight in that East. I mean, they're in first place with 66 points, but you got Columbus at 64 and, you know, Pittsburgh at 63. And, you know, the Rangers aren't that far behind in fourth place in the first wild card spot, believe it or not, at 59 points. So that's going to be a fight as well. You know, Edmonton actually has a 7-point lead over Calgary.
Right.
Games in hand even. So, Edmonton just has to play good hockey the rest of the way. Give them credit. They're 6-3-1 in their last 10. And, you know, maybe they'll add some improvements by the deadline. So right now you got to be feeling pretty good about all three of those teams and where they're at.
For sure, and I really like the captain, and we'll get into it more with Alan. Despite Columbus's winning streak and Pittsburgh's caught their offensive touch lately, posting more goals than the Kings could score in a month in their last three or four games, and Washington still finding their stride and managing to get to the top of that division. And Minnesota, too, you got to give them a stick tap. Chicago's been the leader in that division from out of the gate, and to come up from behind and tie take the lead in the Central. Didn't have them there. Either one of us didn't have them there for our Central Division preview. My pick, Nashville, is starting to rise, but I'm not ready to put them on a riser list yet. Maybe we'll keep an eye on them. So going down the opposite direction, I'll start again with the Pacific Division. My Kings dropped. They've been hanging around that number eight spot. Second wild card there, and they've dropped out of that position and really yielding ground now in the Pacific after a tough loss to San Jose and being passed by Vancouver, who neither one of us had called as being, you know, we thought they were going to be one of the higher lottery picks this season. And I don't know if it's smoke and mirrors or the water in Vancouver, but they're actually really playing some solid hockey right now. And, you know, to look at the bottom of the Pacific and see Arizona and Los Angeles there, that wasn't something, you know, anybody expected at the start of the season. So that's a team that's falling, in my opinion. My other faller of the week, St. Louis, word came out yesterday, I think, that they've kept Jake Allen at home for their little road trip they're on, and told him to take a break and get his head together is basically what the reports coming out of St. Louis are, even though they're, I believe, third in their division as we speak now. That Nashville, I believe, with their win last night, tied them for that third spot. What's going on in St. Louis, and are they going to be able to maintain a playoff spot unsettled in goal as they are?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is a team that we're used to having big regular seasons, right? And the question is, come playoff time, can they kind of break through? And, you know, this year they've been, quite frankly, pretty mediocre. I mean, they're, you know, they're five games above 500. They do technically are in the third spot based on the ROW over Nashville, but I mean, it's too early to, you know, they both have 51 points and they both have played 46 games. So, the you know, the Blues have to get it together. And I wonder if to shake things up, if it's possible, like, you know, they could use Kevin Shattenkirk, who's going to be a UFA at the end of the year. And it sounds like he is probably going to move on due to various reasons. And I'm not saying for them to trade him, you know, for, you know, a top draft pick or a top prospect, but, you know, move him to help their team now some way, if that could, if that's possible. Yeah, it is confusing because that is a deep team in, you know, offensively and defensively. You know, Jake Allen, this is the first time, you know, the one red flag I felt about them going in was this was the first time that he was going to be the guy. I mean, he always had both him and Brian Elliott kind of, you know, if they didn't have a bad game or two, the other guy can kind of pick them up, and they don't have that that safety net, if you will. So just like a lot of things in sports, what did Yoki say? You know, 90% of the game is physical, the other half mental, you know, something like that. So I think that's what you see going on, and they're trying to give him a mental break.
Yeah, and that was the one thing I was worried about when we were talking about St. Louis was, you know, it seemed like for a long time that the Blues were trying to force feed for one spot to Jake Allen. He was going to be the direction they headed. Obviously, when they traded Brian Elliott away, that was the writing on the wall. And you just never know how someone's going to react to a number one spot going somewhere else. You could look at the Kings and say, well, okay, Jonathan Bernier's world beater, number, you know, first round pick, played great with the Kings and just went to be the number one and did not have it and still does not have it. And then Martin Jones, who obviously has gone on to success. So it's always tough to tell where a backup inheriting a number one spot, how that's going to work out. And that, hopefully for the Blues, Jake Allen can get his head together and get back on the ice and back to some of the form he displayed last year. Well, anyway, let me bring in our good friend of the show, Dana Lane. I see him on hold. Play-by-plays of the UNLV Rebel Hockey Club. Good day to you, Dana.
How are you, sir?
I am doing good. Better than what I saw you doing on the side of the road the other night on the way to the Rebel game.
Yeah, I didn't really anticipate having a tire blowout. Not really a great time to do that, but we got
Never
it done,
is.
And you know, I mean, good on my insurance company, because every time I've ever needed them, they've had a guy there, you know, really quick. So, we got there about 10 minutes late, but no scoring before that, so it was nice of them to wait for me.
Very good, very good. And they did end up beating BYU hockey 4-3, going to 23-5 now on the season. 23-5 on the season. Talk a little bit about the BYU game.
You know, I really thought for a team like BYU that has not had a ton of success in hockey. In fact, up until this year, they've been, you know, at least record-wise, downright atrocious. But I thought they were really scrappy. And if I'm a BYU Cougar fan of that team, I think that you have a lot to look forward to. I think the future is extremely bright. Now, there's a combination of things there. I think since the Christmas break, UNLV has, there's been some turnovers, there's been some additions, there's been some subtractions. But sometimes when you have a break like that, you kind of lose your mojo. I mean, this is a team that has been used to winning games by 5, 6, 7 goals. And, you know, they've had some tough ones against Northern Arizona for sure. But this is a team that's used to thriving and putting their foot down on opposing teams' throats and kind of coasting at the end. And they just, you know, they started off playing the 4 games in 4 days in Colorado, and then they played BYU. And, you know, certainly they're 3-2, which is 60% hockey, which I think anybody would take, but you set such a standard by what, you know, people can expect from you. And you know, you can kind of see it on the ice a little bit. They're winning these games because they're better. They're winning these games because, you know, they're just more talented, but they're not winning it because their mojo is there. And they better get it this weekend against an SMU team that they should get it together against quite easily, actually. Because the week after that, they played Northern Arizona and Arizona State and a tough road trip. They're playing, playing those three games, but two of those games are the Arizona State game is sandwiched in between that. So they're going to be actually taking, you know, three bus rides, one there, one to the Arizona State game in Tempe, and then back at the Flagstaff against Northern Arizona. So a tough stretch for them. Still number two because the ACHA decides when and if they put a ranking out. We haven't seen one since the 13th of December. But I think the general consensus is they still have their destiny in their hands. And if they beat Northern Arizona, which they've done already, they will bypass the regionals and go to Columbus.
So that game would lock up that first round bye and the trip to Columbus if they were to win that?
You would think. Well, they played twice. So it will be interesting if there is a split. So very interesting if there's a split. And then they finish up with Cal State Northridge, which has a very impressive record, but they're ranked 10th, which, you know, if you kind of follow these rankings, if you're in the top five, that's, you know, if you're 10th, I'm not sure that means you're very good, even though they have an impressive record.
Right. Who knows with the way they do their rankings or how often they update them anyway.
Right.
We've been looking at it this year and excuse me. They're all over the map with that. Win and take care of business on the ice and nothing left to worry about.
That's exactly right. And they certainly have the opportunity to do that. And it is crunch time. And if they take care of both of those games against Northern Arizona, there should be no doubt, barring any collapse against Northridge, who is 17-3, but you kind of feel like you just kind of get the feel that UNLV is just a step above Northridge.
Well, exciting times for sure coming down the stretch for our Skating Rebels. Let me bring in Chris and move the talk over to the Golden Knights a little bit, Chris.
Hey, Dana, it's good to talk to you.
Hey, Chris.
Got any interesting tidbits for us on the Knights? I believe this week they did their third mock expansion draft. I know you've had some good guests on. Any good tidbits about the Knights you could share with the audience?
Yeah, I don't think that third one has been completed yet. I think they will do that. We talked to Murray Craven on Thursday, and I think that's what we got from him. Interesting. You know, I think we talked about this last week. I mean, he's still working on that AHL affiliate. It still looks like it's going to be Chicago. And then, you know, we have Craig Berube's name came up. And then, you know, of course, with any firing, everybody kind of jumps the gun on, oh, well, Doug Waite could be the next coach if the Islanders don't keep him. Well, if Doug Waite does well in New York, why wouldn't the Islanders keep him? So, you know, if the Islanders don't want him, why would we want him at that point? The other thing is, I specifically asked Murray about, you know, has anything changed as far as timetable, the type of coach you're looking for? And he said no. So what that means is they're going to wait till the last minute to get a coach in here. They are going to get one with experience. And I don't know if that falls in the category of Craig Berube, because, you know, it doesn't appear he has a lot of head coaching experience. I just think you got to get somebody in here, and I keep on saying this, and I've said it since the beginning of the year. I don't wish ill on the Boston Bruins, but I talked to a guy. We had a guy on last week, from the team that worked in Boston, and I said to him, I said, hey, look, you know, Would Julian be the type of guy that would say, nah, I don't want to be part of the expansion process there. That's not for me. Or would he be a type of guy that would embrace that? And he flat out said to me, I know Julian personally, and he absolutely would embrace that opportunity. So I'm not saying that's going to happen, and I'm not starting rumors, but for me, I think you have to have strength at the top, and I think that's exactly what Julian would bring.
I'm sorry, I was just going to say, he'd probably be very sought after from a lot of teams if the rumors keep piling up with the Bruins struggling a little bit, to say the least, lately.
Yeah, well, anybody that's done anything in this league would be, a target of many teams. I just think, look, we got an all-star cast here, really, in their front office. We have the best advantage any expansion team has ever had in the history, maybe, of sports. I think Julian would be perfect to get a fresh start on the other side of the country.
Not bad. I wouldn't hate that at all. I did want to get into one thing with Murray. After the job he did on the locker room development there at T-Mobile, we've both seen it, and it's phenomenal. I know he's heading up the practice facility, and did you guys get a chance to talk about how that's coming along?
Yeah, he says it's going well. He doesn't like it when it rains, and of course, it's rained here the last couple of days. He says he's had some sleepless nights. He's gotten up at 2 o'clock in the morning to go over plans and look at blueprints. So you can kind of tell he's a little stressed about this, because there is a deadline, and nobody will ever say, hey, look, we're behind. That's not going to be the Golden Knights way. But you can tell there's a little stress on his face about this, but I think when it's all said and done, it will be ready to go by the time that they need it to start next season. I don't think, judging by what he said, that it will be fully completed, but it will be at least operational, where the team could have a facility to practice.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm a union electrician here in town, and the old adage with the guys on the job site is, if you draw a 1 foot circle and three raindrops land in that circuit, you head for the truck. With all the rain, I can fully empathize with having that impact your schedule, because I've dealt with it myself, and three drops in the circle, let's go to the truck and head to the house. So I know what he's going through out there. I did want to maybe start a new segment with you this week, and we kind of touched base a little bit this morning on it. Dana, for those of you that don't know, he's the voice of the UNLV Rebel hockey team and also co-host of the Vegas Hockey Hotline on KSHP 1400 with Brian Blessing here in Las Vegas, 12 to 2 weekdays, but he's also the owner of Dana Lane Sports, and he puts out some of the best sports information and gaming guidelines, if you will, on the planet. So I wanted to touch base on that angle of the Vegas hockey going down the Vegas lane and maybe bust out a Saturday night special pick from Dana, and he's good enough to help us out with that. So what are you focusing on for this evening?
Well, I think one of the games, if you go on a website that we write on a daily basis, SBR Picks, they do a great job with sports handicapping information, specifically the NHL. And we gave out the Toronto Maple Leafs tonight over Ottawa. But I think for the sake of this show, the other game that we were looking at was Calgary and Edmonton. And
right.
Look, I've said it for – I have to say it every time. You have to shop for the best numbers, because – this number is all over the place. The best number that I can find is minus $1.35, which is well within the range of what we're comfortable laying. But then there's other books out there that are up in the $1.50 range, which is right above the edge of where we'd like to go. So shop for this line a little bit. And we know Calgary has been pretty mediocre at home. They seem to be too fine at home, trying to be a little bit extra, more pretty than probably Gallatin would like, instead of just being relaxed, which they seem to be more on the road. But, look, I expect a bounce back effort from Chad Johnson. I really like him a lot. I know Brian Blessing, who is a huge Sabre fan, likes him as well. And, Friday afternoon, they held a video session. There was an optional skate that day after Thursday's game. I think Gallatin is kind of putting the lats all around this team, railing them in a little bit. and saying, look, guys, you have to realize where we're at. We are in a playoff race. I don't know if half of you expected to be there, but we are there after their start. We need to start playing like that. And in order to do that, we need to win games at home. And so I think, you know, everybody on the team, including Sam Bennett, who was a healthy scratch for the first time in his career, I think, you know, it was kind of a reset session for Calgary. So we're going to go with Calgary minus $1.35 tonight. Brassard's going to start for, or Brassois is going to start for Edmonton. Talbot faced 42 shots on Friday and then started 42 of, or 43 of the last 47 games. So a AHL backup goaltender is going to be in for Edmonton tonight, which is certainly usually something that I like to shy away from because you just don't know what you're going to get with these guys. But I think it's less about Talbot not being there and more about Calgary reeling themselves in and going to give 100% effort tonight.
All right. Well, that looks like one of the more fun games to watch on the schedule, as well as the Ottawa-Toronto game tonight, too. So we'll keep an eye on that, sir. And we've got our next guest looking to talk some Capitals hockey on the line. So we're going to have to let you go.
Cool.
And we'll be talking to you next week, sir. Thanks again for joining us.
All right, guys. Have a great show. Thank you.
And now we'll bring in Alan Zlotarczynski. Ooh, is it going to happen? There we go. Alan, good day to you, sir. Thank you for coming in to join the show today.
That's fantastic. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
We're going to talk some Capitals hockey. Alan Zlotarczynski is the assistant editor, on-air host, and columnist for Space Coast Daily Sports Talk. You can follow Alan on Twitter at Zlot Sports. Thank you again for joining us. I'm going to let Chris kick off the Washington Capitals talk with you, and I'd like to get into a little bit later on what you see projected the Vegas angle coming into the expansion grasp. But let me bring in Chris, and we'll talk some Capitals hockey.
Absolutely.
Sounds good. Of course, I co-host on Monday nights along with Alan on the NHL on the Ice podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at NHL on _the_ice. And my friend, your Capitals are looking like world beaters these days. You have to be feeling very confident about them. Do you have any concerns about this team?
No, not at the moment. I don't. Obviously, the only concerns as a Capitals fan that you would have is what happens once the cherry blossoms bloom in D.C. in April, right? Because, I mean, right, that is the time of the year that, you know, as Capitals fans, you need to start getting concerned. But I think this is, not to sound like a broken record for anybody that covers the Capitals, follows the Capitals, or loves them, but I do think that this is a year in which the Washington Capitals may be able to have a different outcome come April and May.
Now, Alan, do you think, I mean, this was a top team last year. They kind of just tinkered in the offseason. They made a couple of nice moves, picking up Laura Zeller and Brett Connolly. If any, do you see them doing anything at the trade deadline? And if so, where would you think they would look to add?
Well, you know, I mean, the Capitals are always a team that, you know, again, we saw the Penguins were able to do it from within the organization last year in terms of being a four-line deep team in the playoffs. I mean, the Pittsburgh Penguins beat the Washington Capitals last year because they were able to develop prospects a little bit quicker as the season wore on. The speed from the younger guys absolutely caught the Capitals by surprise and off guard towards the end of the year. I mean, I'll take you back to that 6-2 game that the Penguins beat the Capitals in late March last year. That really was the tide turner. And then the Capitals were just dead in the water come playoff time against Pittsburgh. Now, a lot of people say, well, a puck drop here or a puck drop there in the postseason. But really, I felt the Penguins skated circles around the Washington Capitals in the playoffs. They didn't dominate them, but they were clearly the quicker team. And I think what the Capitals have done this year is they kind of the same thing, if you will. You look down into, you know, homegrown talent with the Washington Capitals. I don't know if you'll see a guy like Jakub Vrána come up, but certainly the Capitals have some talent in the American Hockey League that they could draw from. But remember, guys, this is a team at current right now, a guy that George McPhee essentially put together. You're talking about 8 first-round draft picks on this team. And these guys, you know, they can still go out there and get it done. And the Alex Ovechkins of the world and Nick Backstroms. And then you throw in a guy like an Evgeny Kuznetsov, who was drafted, you know, in the first round back in 2010 and spent a couple of years in Russia. Andrei Burkovsky, who was drafted in the first round back in 2013. You look at a kid like Brett Connolly, who the Capitals have brought up. So I think the Capitals have kind of pulled a page out of the Penguins' lineup in terms of allowing their younger prospects to play. That's something that didn't always occur in the George McPhee era.
Now, Alan, come the play, you mentioned the playoff time. Come playoff time, who is going to be, who's their tough, who's the Capitals' toughest matchup? Is it the Rangers? Is it the young Blue Jackets? Is it Carey Price and the Canadians, or is it another team? I got a funny feeling you're going to say somebody else. But who's going to give them?
Well, it's going to be the Penguins, Chris. It always is the Penguins. You know, there was a couple of years there that the Capitals battled with the Rangers in the playoffs. But for the Washington Capitals, the hump is always going to be Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins. It always has been. I don't care if it was Mario Lemieux or Jaromir Jagr or Tom Barrasso. It's always been the Pittsburgh Penguins, and it will always be the Penguins. It's always going to be Sid against Ovi. It's always going to be, can Braden Holtby keep that one puck out of the net, regardless of who the Pittsburgh Penguins have backstopping for them. So that's going to be the team that, if the Capitals can get past, maybe they can finally hoist Lord Stanley's Cup. I don't know. You know, we saw a terrific game the other night, a complete unbelievable hockey game between these two teams the other night, where defense just wasn't in the cards for either of them. Pittsburgh wins on a 2-point conversion, 8-7. And what a phenomenal hockey game if you like goal scoring. But I know both coaches, Sullivan and Trotz, I'm sure they weren't too happy with their blue lines or their goaltenders.
Yeah, sorry, I kind of hit mute button on myself for a second there. This is Mark. We're talking with Alan Zlotarczynski on the Vegas Hockey Podcast, sir. And I'd like one thing I've noticed in the past month or so, as the Capitals have started to climb through what's a chainsaw of a division with the way everybody else at that top end is playing. They were able to reclaim first place in that division. How much of it is coincidental to the increased production of my old friend Justin Williams, who's in the last month has started to come alive and play the kind of game Capitals fans expect and need from him?
Well, a lot of it has to do with the play of Justin Williams. You know, while you still have your Alex Ovechkins and your Nick Backstroms, this is a team that's always brought in a leader like a Justin Williams. And, you know, it's funny because we talked about this the other night, and I think the thing that's finally clicked with the Washington Capitals is Barry Trotz and in his system of complete and utter puck possession and responsible play away from the puck, which is something the Capitals have always been completely undisciplined in. This has been one of the worst teams in the National Hockey League in terms of discipline away from the puck. Barry Trotz doesn't stand for it. Now, it's taken Barry Trotz about 18 months, but finally, here over the last 6 to 7 weeks, I'd say, that system that Barry Trotz likes to play, and it's clear-cut, gentlemen, it's puck possession, undisciplined play away from the puck, and hold your responsibilities at the blue line. And if you can do those three things and do them well, then you'll produce a winning team. Now, the problem with Barry Trotz has been he hasn't always had guys when he was in Nashville that could put the puck in the net. That's not the case here, as we saw this week. The Caps give up 8 goals to Pittsburgh, and then they bounce right back the next night, only allow 3 to a pretty good St. Louis team, but yet they put 7 more in the net. So I think that while Justin Williams has been a key cog for the Capitals' climb back to the top of not just the Metro, but I think they're tops in the National Hockey League now with 66 points.
Yep.
But I think it's the Barry Trotz's system has finally clicked in full force with everybody on this team.
Now, there was one goal, and there was a whole bunch to look at, but it was really indicative too of that system and having your star player buy into it. There was a play where Ovechkin came down on an odd numbered rush, and he got, we all know his office is that left face off dot, and you never see him miss the net or, you know, when he's there, it's almost golden. You know what I'm saying? But there's a play where he came down and he squared up to fire. And I know what, you know where I'm going with this. And I forget who the player was that came down the center of the ice, but he laid that puck not on goal, but on his teammate's stick. And it was such an easy tap in goal. How encouraging is that to see the star player buying into the system that well? When at times, sometimes that has been a knock against Ovi.
Well, I think that's everything. That is absolutely everything for the Washington Capitals. Because, you know, Ovi's a buy-in guy, maybe come playoff time. But by that time, you know, I mean, this is an 82-game haul. And you know, look, there's no secret that Ovi and Bruce Boudreau never quite bought into one another. And obviously when Dale Hunter was there. But I think Ovi now realizes that, look, if he really is going to win a Stanley Cup, this is the guy that's going to have to get him there. You know, he's not going to go anyplace else and win a Stanley Cup because obviously he would be the centerpiece of the team and the salary cap and all that comes with that with building around him. This is his best shot to do it right here in Washington, D.C., and the best guy for the job is Barry Trotz. Ovi's matured, and I assume or hope that he's figured out by now that, you know what, this guy knows what's best in terms of the system on the ice. So it's great to see Ovechkin buy into that.
Now, I was watching that game, and I saw that play, and I was like, well, what have we here?
Yep.
It was really good to see, even though I'd like to see some games where we're not giving up 8 goals out of Washington.
Yeah.
But on fire right now. They followed up that game with another 7-goal outburst, I think, last night. So they're finding their scoring touch, too. So yeah, I don't know how much of that you put on the Caps in that and how much is just Pittsburgh's finding their gears right now on the offensive side of the ice.
You know, aside from the game this week against Pittsburgh where 8 goals were allowed, you know, I thought Kevin Allen brought up an interesting point the other day when he mentioned that this season – Braden Holtby is actually putting up better numbers this season than he did last year when he won the Vezina Trophy. And the reason that it really isn't being recognized in terms of what he's accomplished so far this season is quite honestly because of the Capitals' slow start. I mean, prior to that 8-goal outburst, the Capitals as a team, Philip Grubauer got in on one of those. But the Capitals had shut out 4 of their previous 6 opponents and were allowing less than 2 goals a game prior to that 8-goal outburst. So, you know, to be in that, to be that far into January with the Washington Capitals, and you look and you see that the top defensive team allowing less than 2 goals a game is the red and white. It was kind of shocking, to be quite honest with you.
Right, right. Well, we being here in Vegas, we do have our common connection with George McPhee. I like what I see from him so far, but I'm curious as to what we can expect. You did go through the rebuild there in, I believe, 2003, or that was the tail end of it, or just the start of it. What kind of roster are we going to look for? Are we going to look for a Washington Capitals 2.0, and that's the brand of hockey that George McPhee really likes to play and focus on?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that he's clearly already stated that what George McPhee likes to assemble, and he doesn't hold this back, is an exciting brand of hockey. And, you know, he's not just saying that for the, you know, to sell tickets or put butts in seats or get people to watch this Las Vegas team. George McPhee is going to assemble a team that gets out there and puts the puck in the net. I mean, that's what he does. I mean, you look at this Washington Capitals team, again, all the homegrown talent that's currently having success with this roster is George McPhee's guys. You know, I mean, 11 current homegrown draft picks on this team. Five of these guys acquired via free agency, but 8 of these guys drafted by McPhee in the first round, 1 of them in the second round, 2 of them in the fourth. And then the diversity in terms of, you know, where throughout the world George McPhee is sends his scouts to draft these players, you know, 8 Canadians, 5 Americans, 2 Russians, 2 Swedes, and 4 from other parts of the world. I mean, McPhee's going to go to the four corners of the world to find great talent for this organization. I would be very excited about what George McPhee's going to do for Las Vegas. And, you know, I like George. George was fantastic for the Washington Capitals. I mean, he had a 17-year tenure here. He did some tremendous good for this organization. He is the reason why this team is built the way that it is. You know, there at the end, it got a little dicey because I felt like George panicked at the end in terms of, you know, when he made the Forsberg and Erat trade, you know, and then, you know, he switched coaches a little too often, bringing in Hunter and then Adam Oates. You know, he was pressing to win that Stanley Cup is what he was doing. And we all know when we press, we do things we don't normally do. And George McPhee did some things he wouldn't normally have done. And I think it cost the Capitals and, you know, it cost him his time there. But, you know, both McPhee, the Capitals, you know, Brian McClellan, you know, everybody's better off now. And I think Las Vegas has got a real winner there in George McPhee. And I think, you know, here's the other thing I'll throw out there too. You know, I like the fact that he hasn't gone right out and hired a coach. I like the fact that he sat back and that he's watched this process take place. You know, George McPhee was known here as a patient guy. You know, he allowed some players to play through some slumps that you know, Mike Green is the perfect example. You know, Mike Green sat on the Capitals blue line, and while Mike Green put up some numbers, there was a time at the end there where people wanted Mike Green traded at the trade deadline. They wanted him gone. And rightfully, McPhee could have went out and brought some talent in to maybe help the Capitals in the playoffs. But when it was all said and done, Mike Green turned out to be the better option once the playoffs hit anyway. So, you know, McPhee's a guy that will stick with his players, and he'll find that organization the right coach.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I know Chris wanted to jump in a little bit here and touch on the Vegas angle. Chris?
Yeah, Alan, so knowing the Capitals as well as you do and knowing McPhee as well as you do, what would you be if you were to put a little, you know, wager on who Vegas was going to select from the Capitals in expansion? Where would you put your money on?
I put it on Philip Grubauer. I put it right there on Philip Grubauer. Philip Grubauer is a top-notch talent, fourth-round pick, a McPhee pick. And Grubauer has been exceptional as a backup goaltender. He'll be had cheap. And you know what? He'll be a starter in this league. And I think that if you can get away in the expansion draft with finding a goalie that can be an NHL starter and give you at least for the first 2 years a decent save percentage and keep you in games early, I think you hit a home run. If you don't have to go out and spend a ton of money on a goaltender, why do it? And I think that I'd keep my eye on Philip Grubauer. I really would.
And my last one for me before I hit give you back to Mark is, knowing you, Alan, on top of being a huge Capitals fan, you are a huge hockey fan. How big do you think, or how excited are you about, and, you know, give us an honest assessment here, about in terms of Las Vegas coming to the NHL and helping grow the sport?
Well, I think it's great. I think it's great for the National Hockey League. I think it's great for Las Vegas. You know, obviously the other day we saw the Oakland Raiders file their papers to come to Vegas, which is just, you know, it's just a time thing now before the Raiders are there. I think it's fantastic. My only issue is with the NHL itself, in that I just simply don't feel, nor have I ever felt, like the league does enough to market their fantastic superstars in these great cities. So we'll see how the NHL proceeds moving forward with Las Vegas. But, Chris, you and I talk about it all the time with how much more the National Hockey League could do for their organizations and for their young superstars, because I can't think of another league that has such an amazing – group of young, talented players as the National Hockey League. Major League Baseball would be second in terms of your Trouts and your Harpers. But really, when you look at it, the influx of young talent in the last 5 years in this game, no other sport rivals it. I mean, it doesn't even come close. And the National Hockey League, in my opinion, just doesn't do enough to market these guys. And now that you've got Las Vegas in the mix, another market where people love to come, love to play, I think the National Hockey League needs to step up a little bit more, and I'd love to see it, because McPhee is going to draft he's going to put together a team that's young and exciting. The only thing I would say is I would expect McPhee to build more from the entry level draft and the expansion draft. I think he's kind of said that, but you're going to have a great hockey team out there, and I'd like to see the NHL stand behind it.
That's one thing that I've been talking about. Now, this is Mark again. The amount of talent that can come in and compete in the National Hockey League right now at 18, 19, 20 years old is unprecedented in the game, in the history of the game. There's so much just young, highly skilled hockey players, and the more global and the more the game grows, the deeper that talent pool goes. And I think, and I went back and looked this up, from the 2015 draft, I think there's now been 20 of the guys taken in the first round that have actually already made their NHL debuts. And even going back to just pre-lockout in the early 2000s and the Detroit model, where you would take a guy in the first round and you'd let him finish his last year or two in juniors. Then you'd sign him to his AHL deal. Then you'd let him play 3 or 4 years in the AHL. And you wouldn't see any of these kids until they were 23, 24 years old. And now it seems like the league as a whole has so much young talent. It's kind of hard. You know, the floodgates are open right now. And if you have the Austin Matthews coming from Arizona and obviously the McDavids and the Eichels and the Laines and just, you know, the defensemen that are coming up with Costa Spear and some, you know, Provorov that are coming in and taking that hybrid defenseman, sort of take the Brent Burns model, if you will, where you do have a good shot. You can't move the puck. You can't skate. The game is changing, and to be entering the league at this time era of the National Hockey League, super exciting for Las Vegas, and it's cool to hear you say that. One more thing did you want to comment on that at all? Or
yeah, I would just say, you know, you're 100% right. And, you know, expansion opens the opportunity for, what, 20, 23 more players, right? I mean, so you're going to see even more talent come into the league. And then the other thing, too, is that with the way that the United States program has developed, you know, a record number of players drafted in the first round. They just won the World Junior Championships again. So, you know, the National Hockey League, look, we love Canada, but the bottom line is, you know, there's three times as many teams in the States as there is in Canada, right? So the National Hockey League loves it when this country thrives. And right now, I don't think this sport has, or at least has the potential to thrive more than it ever has. You're 100% right.
No, I agree. I agree with that 100%. Alan, is there anything you want to get out there and where to find all your stuff before we have to let you go?
Yeah. No, it's just, you know, each night from 9 to 10 right there, do a local sports talk show here. And, of course, with Chris and Brian on Monday nights. And everything can be found on Twitter there. It's Zlot Sports, ZLOT Sports. And, guys, I really appreciate you having me on today.
No, for sure. It's our pleasure, as always. And we'll definitely have you back on later in the season if the Capitals can go on and finish up a back-to-back President's Trophy campaign. We'd love to have you back on again and talk about how that came to fruition later on down the road.
Hey, no problem. Thanks a lot, guys. Have a great day.
All right. You too.
All right. Take care, guys.
All right. And that'll wrap up our Capitals/Vegas angle. Segment of the show. Chris, thoughts and queries on what Alan had to say? It seems like we're all on the same page with where the Capitals are headed.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's going to really come down to those tight series in the playoffs when they play, and the Capitals are an elite team, obviously, but when they play the Penguins or the Canadiens and things of that nature, and it's going to be a 6 or 7 game series, and finding a way to win that 3-2, 4-3, 2-1 game, and winning the series in 6 or 7, as opposed to losing it like they have been in previous years. So, and I know Alan's a big, you know, when it was first started off in terms of the rumor mill of the last spring about George McPhee, and I reached out, the first person I reached out to was Alan, and Alan said that would be a great hire for them. So, yeah, Alan's a great guest on all those accounts.
So, for all the Capitals fans listening, you can follow Alan on Twitter at ZLOT Sports, Zlot Sports, and also one of his podcasts, NHL On underscore the underscore ice, where he co-hosts with Chris and Brian on Monday nights, right?
Yeah, 7 to 9 live show, and then I believe we're on the Fan Speak Radio and WBLZ as well. So if you can catch the replays or, you know, listen to it just like this show anytime you want. So next week, my friend, we're going to be talking Minnesota Wild hockey. We've been trying to get a Wild guest on for some time, and I am like 99% we have somebody, a part of the Hockey Writers Network. I'm not gonna say who it is yet, but I believe we were locked in with that. So we'll be talking Minnesota Wild next week, and not that far away we have our big trade deadline show the week after the Super Bowl. So that's Sunday, February 12th at 3 o'clock Eastern, noon Pacific. We have Zach Devine and Matt Pryor of the Hockey Writers, and we have JD Styles of Cali Sports News. So that's going to be a fun roundtable hour show with all the boys.
I don't know if we're going to be able to squeeze it into an hour, Chris, with all that. Each one of them has great perspective.
Yeah, that might be an hour and a half. That might be an hour and a half show. That's true.
I'm going to set it up for a 90-minute spot on Blog Talk, and we're just going to free air it and see where it goes, which actually I think are some of the best shows when we get guys like that on that really know what they're talking about and just let them go with it. That's some of my favorite times. We are on the HockeyWriters.com podcast page along with a bunch of other podcasts. Make sure you go over there and check out their of hockey podcasts. All of them are good. All of them are worth your time. Some of them are fan specific to the teams. Others like us talk to a general NHL platform, if you will. So make sure you go to the HockeyWriters.com and check out that. As always, we're on SoundCloud, iTunes, Google Play, and our shows are now archived at Blog Talk Radio since we changed over to doing the live format. It's really been a good boost to the show as far as listeners. And you know, another shout out to our European friends across the pond. It's always exciting to see how those numbers keep going up. Sweden, France, Norway, and the UK seem to be our anchor across the pond, if you will, of the people that are, you know, coming together and listening to the show. So we all always appreciate them. Final thoughts on the week and what we're looking forward to on the ice coming up here in the next week or so. I know, before I kick it over to you, Chris, tonight we are going to be on the Kings Road Talk podcast. Look up at JD underscore Styles, STYLZ. We're going to be kicking off the top of the show right at 7 p.m. Pacific.
Yeah, no.
Or 7 p.m. Eastern.
Yes, 7 p.m. No, it's
I'm confused. Pacific. Okay,
yeah,
7 p.m. Pacific.
After the Islander Kings. Yeah, after the Islander
there you go.
King
there you
game.
Go.
So, 10, so roughly 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. Yeah, obviously I'm curious about how the Islanders are going to play the next few games with so much on the line and new coach and dealing with a lot of, you know, good teams. The Kings tonight, who they always seem to lose by one goal against teams. So, and also people would check out a couple of brand new articles up. One hit this morning at eyesonisles.com. Breaking down how the Islanders and the Avalanche are the perfect partners to pull off a major deal. So, check that out.
I wanted to debate that article with you just real quick. You're gonna offer up Hamonic and a prospect for Landeskog. I'm gonna offer Muzzin and a prospect and a pick for Landeskog, who I think might be a better fit as far as the system is concerned in LA. Who do you think gets that deal done?
Well, I actually offered up Hamonic, one of the, you know, they're going to have to give up either Anthony Beauvillier, Kiefer Bellows, who was the first round pick last year.
Don't do
it. Michael Cole was the fifth overall pick a couple of years ago. That one of those three guys, along with really good goalie prospect Linus Soderstrom, who Elliot Friedman reported this week that Colorado wants to get a young goalie in these deals, if you will. So kind of a 3-for-1 package. And again, it all comes down to how the Avalanche feel about that. I think Hamonic
a little bit, he's a couple of years younger than Muzzin. You know, it comes down to the eye of the beholder, you know, from that standpoint, in terms of, you know, to Cole or Kiefer Bellows and guys like that. I know earlier in the year, Colorado inquired about Anthony Bellevue, the young, the first round pick from 2015, who's got a real good two-way game, could be a you know, like I said, a strong top six forward. There's going to be a lot of teams interested for sure. I've heard the Islanders linked with Landeskog as well as Duchesne. I guess the other question is, would Colorado consider trading both of them? You know, would they would they trade Duchesne to one team for three players and trade Landeskog to another team for three players? If they really want to, you know, change the mix, if you think about it, you know, they have Nathan MacKinnon, Tyson Jost, who was the first round pick, top 10 pick last year for them, is on the fast track. They have Mikko Rantanen. So, you know, especially if in these deals, they can get a Bellows or a Del Cole or what have you, a guy knocking on the NHL door, get a couple of forwards in those deals as well as help out other areas of their team and get deeper, I think that's a possibility. Now, whether or not that happens between now, all that happens between now and the trade deadline, maybe they do one of those deals between now and the trade deadline and the other, you know, before the expansion draft or before the draft, you know, we'd have to see. But, yeah, I would think they would get very competitive offers for those players.
Even I don't want to see you guys give up Bellows in that. I think I really like that kid. excuse me. That'd be a big price to kind of a. I mean, if you're already going to give up Hamonic, but maybe giving up the Bellevue and the goalie prospect would be enough to get that deal done.
So you got to give to get. Bellows does look like a really good, but again, he's a prospect. I'm a huge believer of building your team through the draft. Where the Islanders are fortunate of is they have a lot of these top-end forward prospects. So they can trade one to land a proven guy to help their team now, and they still have, you know, let's say they trade Bellows. Well, they still have Del Cole. They still have Barzal. The only thing I said about that trade, what the Islanders can't do, is they cannot, if they're going to trade Travis Hamonic, they can't trade their youngster Ryan Pulock or Devin Tate. They can't, because those kind of guys are going to replace Hamonic. So you can't give up both of those things. They can't trade Barzal, because quite frankly, Barzal in the near future could wind up being better than Duchesne or Landeskog. And obviously, given where they are in the standings, they can't trade their first round pick, because that could wind up being a top 10 pick. So, you know, check out the article. I think it's, you know, I think it's approached from not one of these silly fan things of, you know, we'll give you 50 cents on the dollar kind of thing. You know, kind of for the team. But Colorado, one would think it seems like they're very motivated. And I know teams like the Islanders and the Kings are motivated. So the question, when that happens, that's half the battle. Then it's kind of, you know, how do you match up with in terms of what I want you have and vice versa. In the terms of the Islanders and the Avalanche, they do match up really well. Now, push can come to shove, and these deals don't happen over, you know, the slightest thing or a difference of opinion, and then you hit an impasse, even if you get down to the 1 yard line, if you will.
Well, we're getting to be that time where, you know, past the midpoint, All-Star Game's coming up, trade deadline not too far after that. So I'm sure we're both going to be speculating a little bit on all the moves that are going to, you know, something's going to have to break the ice here, because there's a lot of players that need to be moved for this so teams can protect the players that they want to protect come June. So I'm sure we're going to be speculating about that a lot.
I would think the Islanders specifically, they're going to pull off a major deal like that. And again, it wouldn't just be about this year, but moving forward. But they're going to want to do that sooner than later. They're not going to want to wait to the end of February. That they're going to tell Joe Sakic, hey, Joe, you know, don't think like, okay, you can get this from us, and, you know, we'll touch base in a month. Like, you know, kind of like we're either going to do this in the, you know, in the near future now over the next week or so, or
you know, we're gonna move on.
All right, that's going to wrap it up for this week. Next week, hopefully, we'll be able to lock down our Minnesota Wild in our time slot, and we'll be putting that out at Vegas Hockey Pod on Twitter, so you guys can all tune in next week. If there's a team that you guys want to have us, you know, talk about and feature on an episode of the show, drop us a line at MarkWarner@VegasHockeyPodcast.com, and we'll get Chris churning the wheels and kicking the bushes to bring someone up to highlight your team. So drop us a line, let us know who you're interested in, and we'll do our best to accommodate you. Until next week, for Chris, I'm Mark, and we're gone.